It's not a game. I'm not a robot. Hey, I challenge you. I'm not a phantom. I'm in your faces. I'm here to see through.
You know, sometimes people are solely motivated by the money. There's nothing wrong with that. At one point, people were way more motivated based off of like the company brand and prestige. There was a lot of pride in being a company person. So much now for a lot of reasons. I think a lot of the fear just comes from the fact that they feel that they don't deserve this. Almost like you've been in an abusive relationship with a previous employer, and the trauma of being overworked and underpaid and not recognized has absolutely affected your ability to earn more. And especially like when I do work with other women and when they tell me how much they've done, I objectively say, like, yeah, you absolutely should be getting paid more. You needed to get a promotion and you need to be making six figures. There is no other way around that.
Hello, everybody. I'm thrilled to welcome another incredible guest to the pod. I first came across Andrea's work through her amazing online presence as the Millennial Career Coach, and I've been a fan ever since. Andrea Messier is dedicated to helping millennials take charge of their careers with confidence, offering practical advice and empowering strategies to navigate everything from job search to promotions. Her mission is all about helping young professionals break through barriers and build careers they truly love, which is something that we talk about on this podcast all the time. So this conversation is super exciting. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. I think we can start with the basics. Where did you grow up as a kid? What do you think your career would be? Are you doing what you thought you were going to do?
I grew up in Queens, and I was living in the Bronx for 7 years. When my parents first came to this country, I'm Guyanese. My mom worked at the UN, so that's why she ended up coming to New York City. She actually used to live in Guyana. She used to work at CARICOM, which is the Caribbean Chamber of Commerce. And I will fight anybody that will tell me that Guyana is not a Caribbean country because CARICOM is headquartered in Guyana. That's all of the conversation. So very proud of my culture. But now I've been living in Stamford, Connecticut for the last couple of years because my husband and I did not want to be home poor. And we've been trying to find something in the city, and it just was not going to be feasible money-wise. In terms of career, like the first thing that I've ever wanted to do as a kid was become an astronaut because I love space. And then it's also very fitting that the very first anime I've ever seen was Sailor Moon, so fitting in with the space theme. And then I also wanted to be a singer, but that's really, really hard to try and make money off of that. But then when I went to college, because I still had the inclination of like expressing myself and being artistic, I figured, oh, marketing could be a good career for me to enter. So when it was time to declare a major, I went to advertising and just took a bunch of MarCom classes. And I think I would be one of the very first people that, well, one of the few people rather, that entered into a career that I went to school for. I'm also a proud CUNY grad. I went to Baruch, and then I turned my last internship from college into my first full-time job. So basically, I am a pure city kid through and through. And that's another reason why I had to move, because I'm like, all right, I had my fill of the city. I don't need to stick around.
Very, very fair. Yeah, I grew up right outside the city in Jersey. And then I did a year and a half in Manhattan, and the prices are just insane. So that's also why I ended up outside of the city.
I did want to live in Manhattan for some time, and I'm glad I never did, because
yeah,
it's an experience
for yourself and your bank account for sure.
Yeah,
too much.
All right, so what inspired you to become the Millennial Career Coach? Was there a turning point in your career, or is that something that you've always wanted to do?
No, it was definitely a turning point, because the first part of my career I spent 5 years in advertising. So I've worked at a couple of smaller companies doing pretty much anything related to media sales, but supporting the sales team on their campaigns, putting together RFP responses, managing the campaigns. So I have some pretty big brands under my belt that I've worked with. So for a year and a half, I managed all of Sprint's mobile banner spend. I've also worked on some pretty big budget campaigns for a couple of P&G brands, Showtime, Red Bull, NBC. So I could say these things that it's fun. It was fun for a time, but it was also not very fulfilling. I straight up told one of my coworkers, this is a Sprint. It's not like we're curing cancer. And I totally foreshadowed what the next part of my career was going to be. And they also, I would have had no way of knowing this until it happened. The ad tech and media space is extremely volatile. Mm. And I can say in my 14-year career as a marketer, I have only voluntarily left two jobs. Almost every single other job, I have been let go of, like, budget cuts, reduction work, for all of the not fun corporate stuff. So, and I counted, I spent like a good two and a half years non-consecutively in between jobs. And I'm like, yeah, no. I don't want to. I know firsthand what it's like. So in 2016, that was when I first started coaching, because I became a contract recruiter for the first time. And then I got to see firsthand, being on the other side of the table, there's a ton of people that need help, to say the least. Because I think, like, a lot of times, sometimes when job seekers are, going through the trenches trying to find something, sometimes they think that, oh, okay, you know, you might be the most qualified or you'd be a perfect fit. You can be, but there are also going to be a good amount of people who are going to be just as good as you. And there's going to be even more people that had no business applying to the job. Like, if one job has 1,000 applicants, 900 of those applicants were just not remotely a fit at all. So I wanted to help people that I've literally been in their shoes. I had one point, or rather 2 points, my unemployment benefits ran out. So I was just trying to make sure that I was keeping the bills paid this through my savings. So yeah, it's tough out there. And I want to make it less tough for people.
That's incredible. How did your own career challenges shape the advice you now give to others? Because of course you face challenges yourself too, besides the ones you're trying to help.
Exactly. And I think that sets me apart from other coaches and why people like working with me, because I will never sugarcoat things. That's why I had to start off with being a New Yorker, because I will always keep it 100. Like, it's not going to do you any favors if I was going to be working with you for me to just say what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you the reality of what's going on. Save time, and I'm not going to waste your time that you are paying me for. But I also will say that, especially like in the career development space, there's not a lot of people that look like me. And I think that's also really important for people that I work with, because I do want to work with other women of color, other like disenfranchised groups for sure. Because a lot of advice that is out there are frankly coming from people that are in very privileged positions. Mm. You know, like, not everybody wants to work at Google or Amazon. Sure, that's going to be a little level of prestige, but especially not now, because with how many layoffs are happening at these companies. Yeah, I could potentially help you get in there, but I have no control of what happens
once you're there,
like whether or not you'd be laid off. And I think like there's a lot of like some of the bigger names out there, I'm not going to name drop them, but even though like, you know, they have great intentions and they can provide some really good advice, it's not going to be applicable for a lot of people that just need a job and don't really have the aspirations or the desire to go through the process of getting of like going at a big company, because these companies will put you through the ringer for several months, several rounds of interviews. I had one person that had gotten laid off from Deloitte, one of the big four accounting and consulting firms, and she was interviewing at Bain. And I bring her up because this is the most interviews I've ever had anybody tell me they've had to go through. 10 rounds.
Wow.
Granted, she was
applying for a senior level marketing role, but I'm like, I don't think it's going to be very likely that you're going to get this, but because like you just got laid off, I always tell people, take the interview anyway, because you never know what can happen. It is practice. And if anything, it could be a great new relationship you can form if you could really hit it off with somebody, whether or not they hire you.
Definitely. Yeah, I've kind of been in the same mindset. So I don't know if I mentioned to you before we started recording here that I'm currently job searching. And I've been trying to stay in that mindset of, I know, like when you go on LinkedIn and you see, oh, 1,200 people applied for this job, that can't deter you as much as you probably want it to. And then you're sitting there, you're like, oh my God, how am I going to stand out in a pile of 1,200 applications?
Oh, yeah. Take comfort in the fact that most of those people had no business applying for that role.
Exactly.
Like, they could still be in high school. They could be in other countries. They didn't answer the right questions. They might need sponsorship. But also, just so that I can address what's happening with LinkedIn. LinkedIn does not count actual applications because they have no way of actually confirming whether or not you completed an application. At best, they could just say that you clicked on it.
Interesting. Okay. That's really good to know.
Yeah. And then another thing with a lot of LinkedIn job postings is that most people, LinkedIn is also very expensive for recruiters. So most of the time, recruiters will just be paying for one license for Sales Navigator versus a recruiter seat because it's way more accessible. And then they'd be able to do the same thing in terms of finding candidates and reaching out to them. But in terms of the job postings, when they work with the rest of their recruitment and HR team, they're most likely using their ATS to batch blast that job posting to several boards. So the job posting that's going to be on LinkedIn, they did not necessarily pay LinkedIn directly to put it there. It was through a mass distribution service. So that same exact job posting is also going to be on Indeed, Monster, what have you. There's so many job boards out there.
Got it. Okay, well, when I get to that step of applying, what is like the most common mistake that you see clients make on a resume? And how do you go about fixing that?
The biggest one is that, and this is the one that's holding people back, is that they reiterate what's in their job description. And as a recruiter / hiring manager, I want to know what made you good at your job, not what the job was. So a lot of times people don't know what to say, or worse, they haven't kept track of what they've been doing. If they have no metrics, no results, nothing quantifiable, it does not help you stand out.
That's a good one, keeping track. I think sometimes we're so like deep diving into like working on what we're doing right now that we don't have the thought of like, okay, I'm gonna keep tracking of my achievements and my successes. Yeah. Right.
That's why As a marketer, and this would apply to anybody who is in marketing and in communication, sometimes it's very easy to just get caught up with creating things, making things look pretty. But at the end of the day, as a marketer, your sole goal with regardless of whatever channel you're using is to deliver growth to the business. That is the sole function of the marketing department. So whatever you have done that has contributed to some kind of growth to the business. So if you can say definitively, yeah, I helped manage this campaign that had a positive ROI, brought in millions of dollars in revenue, or even something on a smaller scale that, hey, I put together these pieces of content, posted it on social media, and some of it went viral and it led to X amount of traffic to the site. Those are things that make you good at your job. And these are going to be real examples that you could talk about in an interview so that the hiring manager knows that, oh, okay, this person knows what they're doing. They'd be a good fit.
Yeah. So besides keeping track, what are some like other top tips for millennials and even Gen Z who are just starting an account on LinkedIn, like who want to stand out either on the platform or in interviews? What would your top tips would be?
So LinkedIn, I always start, if you're just starting off on LinkedIn, they do incentivize you, and LinkedIn does actually have like a progress bar to say like, all right, this is how you would fill in your profile, just making sure you take full advantage of the real estate on LinkedIn because of like LinkedIn is a website and
since it has a search function, that means it has an algorithm, which also means not just for its content, but also for people's profiles. So I always tell people LinkedIn gives you the real estate to use it. And as opposed to a resume where less is more, because nobody's going to read your resume word for word, because again, LinkedIn is a website with its own algorithm, that you have more of an opportunity to put things on there that are searchable. So if you are going to be, and I'm going to be using marketing a lot as an example because it's the first thing that comes to mind, but like say if you're in account management, for instance, you want to have as many instances as possible, like with your experience, what your account manager titles are, with the responsibilities that you have as an account manager. These are the accounts that you've managed. These are your upsell opportunities. These are how big the accounts were. This is what you've done. This is the tech stack that you've used. These are the case studies that you've provided. There's a lot of ways that you can, LinkedIn gives you a lot of real estate for you to really show to the billion users on LinkedIn who you are and what you can bring to the table. And then in terms of interviews, I think like some people might be familiar with the STAR interview format, situation, task, action, result. I tend to flip that on its head. So if you were going to, if you get a question in an interview, well, tell me about a campaign or tell me about a success story, you always want to start with the result. I'm like, oh, okay, well, let me tell you about this campaign that I ran that generated over $7 million in revenue, which is one of my best campaigns in my career. And these are some of the things that you've done. Like, okay, so with this campaign, I used email, Google, Meta, text ads, guerrilla marketing. I used pretty much every single channel and I had a $250K budget and I was able to really maximize every single channel, like working really closely with our partners, creating some of the ad copy, actually following up with some of the leads myself. And then that led to the $7 million revenue at the end of the campaign, which was about like 2.5 months.
Interesting. I've actually never heard of that format before.
Yeah, like I think it's a pretty traditional format. Another tip I could give for people interviewing, especially if you feel as if you ramble a lot and you don't know what to say, just have a little cheat sheet. Especially if you're going to be doing a virtual interview, you could have like something a little on the side and just have the little bullet points that you could reference.
That I have definitely done. That's super helpful. Our next question for you is actually one that we got from an audience member, and I thought it'd be perfect to ask you. Nat and I were going to answer it, but I thought this was perfect for this interview. So this person asked, how do you guide, and I just put in clients here, so how do you guide your clients who feel stuck in their current roles, but aren't sure what they want to do next?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, if you feel stuck, at the very least, you do know that if you're going to have a conversation with a career coach, then deep down, you know that something has to change. So it's either, and I will say that a lot of times when people do feel stuck in their current roles, 9 times out of 10, they are going to leave because there are other like bigger factors that have led to them being stuck. The work is being unfulfilling. The leadership that they're working for is just not a good fit. There could be toxicity on that team, or they've been passed over when it comes to going up, because not every single organization is going to have upward mobility. Sometimes they just want to keep people in the same role because they're too good at their job. So how I like to work with those clients, like we'll talk about these things, like what would be some of, like if I had a magic wand, what would the ideal job look like? What are some of the things that would be holding you back? Like we would have to be real with yourself in terms of what you actually want and what you would do to get there. Because a coach can only do so much. You still need to be able to work with the coach. Like I basically am going to be able to grease the wheels for you to move forward. I will give you the clarity. I will give you tools that you need to realize your worth and help you move forward. But I can open the door for you, but you still got to be able to go in.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned earlier in the interview that you were happy at work, but you felt like you weren't necessarily working towards some impact that you wanted to have. So what's your take on the balance between pursuing passion versus stability in a career?
Yeah, and I think that's entirely subjective because, you know, people are going to prioritize different things in their life overall. Career is just one part of it. You know, sometimes people are solely motivated by the money. There's nothing wrong with that. At one point, maybe not so much now, and I would love to see some data supporting this, but, you know, like in a bygone era, people were way more motivated based off of like the company brand and prestige. You know, like there was a lot of pride in being a company person. So much now, for a lot of reasons, which we do not have time to get into in terms of where, you know, how companies have been operating. And then, of course, you know, a lot of people that are just motivated to, like, they have that calling. Like, when you see a lot of healthcare workers really motivated to take care of patients, even if they're starting off in their healthcare journey, like, as an intern or as a CNA, the pay is not great, but you're motivated to help people get better. So that's an entirely, that is a question that only you would really know the true answer for. But if it is something that you absolutely need clarity on so that it can inform your decision moving forward in terms of where you want your career to go, that's where like a career coach would be able to really help probe that out of you. Like, I have specific sessions where we go over where I ask you, like, what matters most to you in your life? Like, are you motivated by just doing passion? Okay. But also, is the passion project going to be enough to pay for your bills? You know, landlords don't accept passion as rent payment. So what's another way that you could balance that out? Like, if you're passionate about photography, but if you're really good at writing code, nothing wrong with you having a photography side hustle, or just, again, like a passion project, just like taking shots of people and outside on Instagram. If you could get paid for that, cool. And then that's going to be another conversation. Do you want to leverage that passion and spend enough time on it and turn it into a business? That's something else that a coach can help you with too.
Interesting. Yeah. Finding your passion. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about like finding your why and why you want to do something and why you're in that career. And so I think that really ties in nicely. And it's definitely a practice that I think everyone should do. Even if you're happy in the job you're in, just like sitting down and thinking about, you know, why do I actually enjoy this? If this job ended tomorrow, what would I want to move on to? You never really know in today's world what's going to happen. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Playing off that, with so many people job hopping today, including myself, what is your advice on building kind of a cohesive personal brand across different roles and even across different industries? I know myself, I'm looking to move from nonprofit to for-profit. So how could people like adapt their story to fit a new industry?
So the key to that is basically when it comes to building a personal brand, a lot of people, I feel as if they're just focusing on like, oh, this is who I am. If you're going to be considered for any opportunity, you ultimately need to answer the main, like the one question that hiring managers are going to ask is, okay, how can you make this pain point go away? And this would be the case, like, even if you were going to go into a sales position, if you're going to be selling a product or service to a person or another company, it needs to solve some kind of problem. So you need to make sure that whatever your expertise is in is going to be solving a real business need. And it's going to be very clear that, okay, this is a problem that you're facing. This is what I can do to solve this problem. Because, Grace, you are a marketer, the problem that you would be solving would stem around growth. But then that could go even deeper because there's different types of marketing to consider. Would you be focusing on, you know, bringing awareness to a new product or service? Like, is there going to be a company that is going through growth that needs help with bringing awareness in a new market? Does this company, like, if they're already established and they're trying to do, they're trying to generate leads, or like they have leads and they're not converting yet, what are some ways that you can do to help warm up those needs? This is where demand gen and conversion would come into play. This is, again, like where content could come into play. And then, of course, like, what can these leads do to actually convert and become sales? So I'm looking at things like from a funnel perspective, top funnel with bringing in awareness, mid funnel with bringing in leads, and bottom funnel closing those leads into customers. There's many different things that you can do to warm them up in that journey. And I know, like, I
I'm using marketing so much in my responses, but even then, like, you know, you do need to market yourself, obviously, if you're building a personal brand. This is not going to be a requirement for a lot of people. Sometimes you can just show up as long as you're able to talk to somebody, and if they need, like, just literally a person to do the job, that's cool. Obviously not always the case, but I would say, like, for a lot of jobs where it's going to have, like, a little bit of a white collar element, if you're not going to be physically doing the labor, then it is very important that you are emphasizing, hey, these are the problems that I can solve for a part of business. These are the skills that I have in place, and this is what I could do.
Yeah, now that's amazing advice. So what unique challenges do you see millennial women facing in the workplace, and how can they best advocate for themselves?
I think millennials in general, so I'm an elder millennial, I'm in my 30s, but yet there's still a good amount of people that still see millennials as children. And I can definitely, this has definitely been something that I had faced, especially like earlier in my career. People were kind of infantilizing me. And I could also see this happening with Gen Z, especially as the last few years have definitely been brutal for any new grad, to say the least, that there could be a stigma that they are still kind of stuck being like in this kidult phase. So that is definitely something that can come up. And then, of course, you know, there's still good old fashioned sexism, racism, all the isms that could pop up. And it's always very subtle. I would personally am a firm believer that you don't ever want to be stuck in a bad situation longer than necessary. Because deep down, like, if you know it's going to be bad and you're seeing it, it's very unlikely that it's going to get a turn around. Like, if you have a boss that's not seeing you for what you're worth and is just looking at the surface level attributes of your personality, of who you are as a person, then they're not going to be able to see anything more. And that would absolutely inform your decision to leave. Because just because one person doesn't see you for what you're worth doesn't mean another can't. You know, there's so many people that have been branded as low performers when they got laid off this year and last year. Thousands of people. And it really grinds my gears, because clearly, like, if anything, it shows more of the company, like, all right, you're going to have a low performer. Why did you hire this low performer in the first place only to fire them unceremoniously? These companies are big name companies that clearly needs to have top talent. So at some point, these people were top talent, meaning that they're absolutely going to be considered top talent in places that can appreciate them more and wouldn't do that to them.
Yeah, definitely. About maybe 3 episodes ago, Nat and I had a conversation, just the two of us on the pod, about sexism in the workplace and all the drama that can come along with that and other isms, as you said. So it's definitely, I wouldn't say interesting conversation, but it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had by more people. Yeah. Because I think some people have this idea that, oh, you know, we're past that, but we're not.
No.
And it's something that so many women still go through and suffer through today in a lot of organizations. And a story that I shared a few weeks ago is that I reported someone and nothing ever came of it. So I think that's definitely something that a lot of women go through. And it's something that they need to understand they're not going through that alone, sadly. It's not. It's very common.
Oh, yeah. Every woman, unfortunately, is going to go through that to some degree. And I think there's a couple of other things that I could add to that. You also need to be careful, even if, like, if you're going to be working in a team that's predominantly women, you would think that there could be some solidarity, and that's not necessarily the case. You can find a lot more toxicity. And I think, like, and I don't have a definitive rationale as to why that's the case, but there's absolutely, like, some level of tribalism or almost like a rivalry, like, oh, we don't want to have, you know, you don't want to see that one-upsmanship. And that was absolutely the case with, like, when DEI was first implemented.
there was this really good article from the former COO of Pinterest. And I say that because she was very upfront in terms of what she was facing, even though she was in the C-suite. Pinterest, being a tech company, still had a tech bro-y culture, and she was trying to change that, and it didn't go far at all. Yeah. However, she was also still part of the problem because she was, I want to say she was at Google before. I can't quite recall. This was quite some time ago. But she was also in a leadership position at another tech company, and she had other women report things to her, and she didn't do anything of it. And for that, so basically, like, karma basically gave her just desserts when she faced the exact same thing that other women were reporting to her in Pinterest, and that affected her tenure there.
Interesting.
So I would say, like, worst case scenario, there is very much a possibility, like, people don't believe women. And that is universal, whether you're, like, when it's your career or your life or whatnot.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that it is going to, like, there's going to be different degrees to it. There's going to be people that can take your concern seriously, and you need to recognize as soon as possible, can you trust these people? Are these people that will actually listen to what you have to say, will actually take what you have to say seriously? And I would not give them a lot of time to act on, like, they basically, at that point, you get one strike. I'm like, all right, how can you handle the situation? How are you going to be able to treat me, whether or not, like, I have something that has impacted me, that has hurt me, to even just, like, even showing, like, okay, I need help with something. How are you able to even, like, help me? I have a question, or I'm stuck with I'm stuck on a work project. That's also a really good indicator. Okay, is this person going to help me move forward, or am I just going to have to fend for myself? And I would make sure that you do not stick around longer, because it will eventually, like, there could absolutely be bigger strikes.
I totally agree. And that's what our conversation was about as well, and our personal experiences with that. And yeah. I relate to everything you just said, and I think a lot of our listeners, you know, sadly do as well.
Yeah.
Kind of rolling this into negotiations when it comes to salary and promotions, what advice would you give to women to kind of overcome their fear of advocating for themselves in that instance?
Yeah, I think a lot of the fear just comes from the fact that they feel that they don't deserve this. Almost like you've been in an abusive relationship with a previous employer, and the trauma of being overworked and underpaid and not recognized has absolutely affected your ability to earn more. And all it would take, really, and this is what it boils down to, you have a conversation with somebody, whether it be a career coach or even somebody that is in a place to offer you more. I like to work with people, especially like when I do work with other women, and when they tell me how much they've done, I objectively say, like, yeah, you absolutely should be getting paid more. And usually, like, how I say it, it's like, yeah, no, they don't offer any resistance. I basically said, no, you've been making like $60,000 and you've been at the same company for 7 years. You can absolutely, you needed to get a promotion and you need to be making six figures. There is no other way around that.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. And I even feel like having these tough conversations as women, it's hard because, yeah, we feel like we do not deserve it. And even I found myself even drafting emails and trying to be as friendly as possible because I don't want to be seen as like I am demanding something, and that's just not it. We can just be straight to the point. We don't need to be friendly.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if you want to pretend, and I don't necessarily agree with this logic, but it does help to an extent. You know, the white man would have no problem just saying, yeah, this is what I deserve. This is what I would like to make, and then they get it. But I would say, like, and this could go the case, like, not necessarily, like, men exclusive, because I've also worked with men that also have that insecurity. Because, again, like, if you're stuck in a place and you don't like being stuck and you want to move forward, a lot of that fear could also just come from not knowing what's out there. So when that is a big fear that everybody has, the fear of the unknown. And if you don't know, then that could hold you back. And then you're like, well, I don't know how much I should be making. Well, hey, this is where we'll go to specific sites that have data. I like to reference salary.com, payscale.com, onetonline.org, because they have actual, like, hard data They have surveyed companies and they weigh that against the cost of living depending on specific areas where you live so that they can tell you, okay, based off of your experience and cost of living, this is how much you should be making. So as long as you're armed with data, you have an understanding of, you know, what the market actually is. And obviously some companies aren't going to follow that. Sometimes they're just going to underpay, and that's fine. There's also going to be some companies that will be able to pay you what you're worth because they know better. And they're going to be serious companies that do not want to just leave the roll open and just wait for the lowest bidder.
Yeah, absolutely. What advice would you give to someone trying to establish themselves as a leader early in their careers?
So I would always like make sure that they have a very strong why. And not just because, oh, I want to be a leader or I think I'm going to make more money off of that. I think like having the why is going to be really important because that's going to inform what your leadership style is going to be. And also, it's also really important for anybody that wants to be a leader. You have to work with people. And there's going to be two sides to that. The people that you are going to have on your team, I am a firm believer that a good leader is only as good as the people on their team because there needs to be an equal division of labor. You as a leader cannot take on every single thing, but you still have to have some knowledge of that, especially if somebody on your team is not going to be available for one reason or another. How are you going to make sure that that gap is filled? So making sure that you know your why and you know what your strengths are going to be so that you can best guide the team that you're going to be leading. And you also need to answer to people above you. And that is a skill that I think a lot of people just do not understand or that they're going to learn the hard way in terms of managing upward. I've been in mid-level management for quite some time, and it's definitely a balancing act. I enjoy being a people manager. I thoroughly enjoy just like really working closely with the team just to make sure that gaps are filled because you as an individual are not going to know everything. And you shouldn't be doing everything because that's why you have a team. But it's also going to be like you're the person that you're going to be reporting into is not going to be available all the time. They just aren't going to be because as you progress in your career, you're going to be spending a lot of your time in meetings and just talking to people. So it's not you're just not going to be involved in a lot of the day-to-day tactical work. That's where your team is going to come into play. So it's really important that you are able to establish a regular cadence with the people that you're reporting into, and you're setting realistic expectations, both in terms of how things are going, if things are going great, and if things aren't going so great, what do we need to do so that we could get closer to where we want to be?
Definitely. This has been amazing, and you've given so many really actionable tips for all of our listeners to use after this conversation. But really kind of just wrapping up, we have a few more questions for you. And that first one would be like, what's the best piece of career advice that you have ever received? Not given, but that you have ever received.
So actually, I would say that the biggest piece of advice that stood with me has actually not been related necessarily to my career, but to my resume. Mm. I had an amazing person from Whirlpool work with me. And I was like really like starting off in my career. So at the time, like, I was like, oh, my God, like this big company wants to recruit me. That's so cool. So I spoke with him and he wanted to, you know, like he saw my LinkedIn. He actually found me on LinkedIn. So that's how we had this conversation. And they sent my resume over to him, and he actually gave me, he didn't have to, because like a lot of internal recruiters, they're just trying to find the right people. They're not in a position to provide advice to job seekers because they don't have time. But he was able to take time with me and just walk me through my resume and say, hey, these are some of the things that you could keep in mind. And that advice has stood out to me, especially when I became a recruiter as well, when I started reviewing resumes. And yeah, like I was able to practice what I preach, not just with my own resume, but even like seeing people that I was screening and eventually hired. This is what some of the things that really stood out for them. Mm. These are some of the things that I want to make sure that are present.
That's great. That's great advice. And I think it's time for two of the most fun questions in the pod. We love asking this. If you could work with anyone dead or alive as a mentor or coach or colleague, who would it be and why?
So if somebody was coaching me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Michelle Obama.
Oh, so yeah. Good.
The Obamas are also my dream dinner guests. I would love to have them over.
I would love to have them as well.
Play some Miles Davis on record. Just talk about books.
She's our number one goal to have on the podcast. She would be amazing. Yeah. That's the goal.
I still need to read her book.
It's a good book.
Yeah.
It's great.
Now I'm in the middle of quite a few different books. I've also been trying to hone my copywriting. So I've just been trying to get some additional insights there. I would say another person that I don't mind working with to some capacity and just see if he's that much of a madman is David Ogilvy. I would like to think that there was definitely he has a team of people that helped him with some of that. There was too much creativity coming out of just one man's brain.
Those are great. Okay, last question before I ask it. I just want to say thank you so much. It's been really, really fun conversation. And I know coming from me, someone who is currently job searching, I will definitely be chatting with you after this interview about my personal journey.
Please.
So, yeah. Quickly wrap up. This is a question we ask to everyone who comes on the pod just for a little fun closing. If your life had a theme song, what would it be?
So I am a huge Persona 5 fan. I'm a big gamer as well. I'm married a gamer. And I grew up playing video games. My favorite game is Persona 5. I spent hundreds of hours, no joke, on that game. And towards the end, spoilers for anybody that might play it, you're basically fighting a godlike entity and you're running up this giant scary staircase full of bones and it's raining blood. And you hear And it sounds so epic because you would have heard the song a couple times in the game, but it's the name of the song is called Life Will Change. And you think a Japanese song, a Japanese game, it could have been a totally different direction. No. They have the most soulful Japanese woman singing, "It's not a game. I'm not a robot. Hey, I challenge you. I'm not a phantom. I'm in your faces. I'm here to see through." And it's cool because you basically you're the protagonist of the team. You're fighting against the man. You're fighting against these, as the game progresses, first you fight a perverted gym teacher. And then you fight, a famous artist who's just plagiarizing his art. And then you fight an actual Yakuza. And then you're going against a hacking group, and then you're going against Japanese Trump. So as the game progresses, you keep on fighting more and more scary antagonists until you eventually fight God, because it's a JRPG, you have to fight God.
That's amazing. I think I want to play the game now.
You fight a false god. A false god, rather. So, it's still not... if you're deeply religious, it's just not going to be that offensive. You're basically fighting an entity that has taken on the administrator of the world that nobody had asked for. But, yeah.
Sounds familiar. Great.
Very relatable today.
Anyway, I think this has been amazing. Andrea, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add as we wrap up this episode?
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure being on this podcast. I'm hopefully people have learned a few things. My inbox is open. I'm open to taking new clients. So you can find me on LinkedIn. So what a warning for people who find me on LinkedIn. Even though my maiden name, I professionally go by Andrea Mazir. If you Google Andrea Mazir, you'll find my website and my LinkedIn should be there. But my name might also pop up as Andrea Velasquez because I got married and I did change my name. And you can also find my website, themillennialcareercoach.com. Millennial is spelled with two L's and two N's.
Amazing. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your journey as the Millennial Career Coach. Your insights were incredibly valuable, and I know our listeners will walk away with practical advice to take charge of their careers. It's been a pleasure having you, and we're excited to see the impact you continue to make. For all of our listeners, make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at Goal Gearhead Podcast for updates and amazing content. You can listen to Go Get Her wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to tune in. We have weekly episodes you don't want to miss. So see you next week.
Bye, everybody.